My fifth significant relationship, my awakening. Around September 2003, my business partner, DocuNet, Mike, hired a new salesperson by the name of Gloria to sell our products. She was one of the many he had hired, as all her predecessors had failed dismally. What made it worse was that Mike had not discussed this with me or anyone else for that matter, because, as it turned out, Gloria was a friend of a friend of Mike's. When he announced this new appointment at our weekly management meeting, we all threw our toys out of the cot. But to his credit, he said that he wanted to give her an opportunity and was prepared to pay her salary out of his own pocket for 3 months, but asked us to support her and give her a chance. When I found out that she knew nothing about IT, I was even more flabbergasted, but Mike's view was that she was attractive and that she could sell, which would get her through the door. Then it was up to her. In my mind, this was another classic Mike sales pitch of, "Join me and I'll make you rich." I couldn't be party to another lamb being led to the slaughter, so I backed off and barely said a word to her for a couple of months, besides daily pleasantries. Give Gloria her due. She tried. She worked hard, but she was battling. I knew this would be the case at that point. Not even Mike, our best salesman, had sold anything of significance, even with his 30 years' experience in his slick, smooth-talking manner, not to mention his thousands of contacts. Gloria was out of her depth. In fact, she was in the wrong swimming pool. I was secretly hoping that she would soon see the light and go back to doing what she did best. I had no idea what that was, as I knew nothing about her except that she was divorced and been sold a lemon. By the time December came, she was still trying as hard as ever. I had not really spoken to her except for the one occasion when she came and asked for my help. I was so engrossed in trying to solve a difficult technical problem for one of our customers that I didn't need the distraction. I suppose with my normal work personality, I was somewhat offish to her, as I didn't try to go out of my way to help her. Now, normally, I'm very helpful, but when I'm trying to deal with a real brain-teasing problem, I tend to be less so. I said I would get back to her and went back to my own problem. A little later, once I had solved my brain teaser, my mind opened a little to the outside world, and I immediately recognized my less-than-helpful behavior, so I went to her desk to rectify things, but she had already left the office. On the Thursday before the Friday that Debbie had asked me to commit to marrying her, I had received an updated internal staff telephone list, as some of our staff had changed their mobile numbers. I checked through my mobile phone to ensure that all the numbers were correct and noticed that I did not have Gloria's number on my phone, so I saved it. Why I did it? Well, I wasn't too sure. On the Friday evening, after the incident with Debbie, I then left and I was sitting at home thinking about the turn of events. Typically, what had happened in our relationship in the past was that we would have an argument, break up, and then a couple of hours later, make up again. This time, it had to be different because of the new dimension of marriage having been brought into the equation. I knew I couldn't make the kind of commitment to Debbie that she required, and it would have been extremely selfish of me and unfair to her to keep her living in hope that I might. I believed that she deserved the right to find someone who might be able to offer her the long-term security she sought. So I decided that I had to accept was over and move on, and sitting at home, feeling sorry for myself, was not the best idea. I was going to call a friend and arrange to go out, but as I scrolled through my phone, I noticed Gloria's name and decided to contact her via SMS. I had no idea whether she was involved in a relationship or not, so my message went something along the lines of, "If you are not involved in a relationship and happen to be at a loose end tonight, would you like to get together? If you are involved, please accept my apology for having contacted you in this manner." I sent it and waited to see what happened. It must have been about 20 minutes later that she responded via SMS and said she wasn't involved and we could get together. I then phoned her to make the arrangement and agreed to fetch her from her house and go out from there. During the conversation, I learned that she had 3 children, a 21-year-old daughter who lived on her own, and two sons, aged 17 and 11, who lived with her, but had left that day to spend the holidays with their father, who was living in Plettenberg Bay. So, for the first time in ages, Gloria was on her own and had some time to herself. When I arrived at her house, she wasn't ready. She had only just got back, as she'd been with friends, when I called. I sat down, and as the house was fairly open plan, we were able to chat as she was getting ready. I had a look at her CD collection and saw that she had a similar taste in music to mine, which obviously made her a good person. I asked her who her favourite artist or band was, and she said the Red Hot Chili Peppers, which made her an even better person, as they are my favourite band. She was scoring seriously good points thus far. It was so easy and comfortable to chat to her from the very first minute. There were no uncomfortable silences, as is usually the case when two strangers get together for the first time. I remarked about this to her, and she said, "We have a spiritual connection. That's why it's so easy for us to communicate." Then she said a very strange thing to me. "You are an old soul," which I immediately took as an insult, but in good humour. Just because I was bald and generally a responsible person did not make me old, I insisted. I could party with the best of them, and I considered my outlook to be young. In fact, I pointed out all the friends of my two eldest kids thought I was the coolest dad in town, which I might add with a touch of humility was a fact. She went on to explain that she meant it in terms of my soul age, which was a little weird for me as I did not understand the concept at all. After all, I was a traditional reborn Christian who had been indoctrinated into the beliefs that we are born, we live, we die, we go to heaven or we go to hell. So where exactly our souls get the opportunity to age was one of the thoughts that came to mind, but I didn't voice my thoughts. I could smell incense burning and asked her about it. She said she often burned it, especially when she was doing her numerology and tarot readings. To an indoctrinated Christian, this was as good as witchcraft. Oh boy, here I was with this lovely lady who had already chalked up some serious points on the board, and there she goes, blowing the points quicker than I could write them up. The little hair that I had on my head was standing up, and I did what any good Christian would do. I went on the defensive. "I believe in God and in Jesus Christ, and I must warn you that if you say anything that conflicts with my belief, I will get up and walk out of here." Her response threw me even more. She said she also believed in God and Jesus Christ. Now I was even more confused, as I had always been taught to believe that numerology, astrology, and tarot reading were the work of the devil. But at the same time, I was curious to learn a bit more about these dicey activities and her involvement in them. She explained that numerology is merely a translation of numbers, which are essentially an energy form, and those energies determine and describe our personalities, amongst other things. She said a whole lot more, but it all sounded gobbledygook to me. To prove her point, she asked me what my full name was, how it was spelt, and my date of birth. She then set about writing numbers and scribbling notes on a piece of paper. Within a few minutes, she started to describe my personality and my strengths and weaknesses. I was staggered. But so was she. I was amazed that she could know all these things simply from my name and date of birth. She was surprised because she had formed an opinion of me based on her experience of me at work. She assumed I was a quiet, unsociable recluse that stuck to himself and ignored everyone else. Yet as she unraveled my numerology, she learned that that was not the true me, but my work persona. I was now captivated and started asking lots of questions. It is in my nature to question everything, not because I might not believe it, but purely because I want to understand it. The only thing that I have ever accepted in faith is that there is a God. For the rest, I will question, debate, and try to tear things apart with logical reasoning and deduction until it is crystal clear and simple. If it is not simple, then it cannot be understood by everyone. If it cannot be understood by everyone, then I consider it to be an elitist argument and not the core truth. I have never believed that the truth is reserved for the minority. To me, that is not God's way. By now, it was quite late, and all thoughts of going out had long since disappeared. I listened to Gloria as she explained her spiritual beliefs and understanding. She had spent the last 10 years of her life studying the Bible, the Quran, and the Torah, Eastern philosophies, Western philosophies, etc. I was skeptical at first, as she spoke of us, people, that is, having multiple journeys, and on each journey we would learn life lessons and pay back karmic debts. Then she said something else that was very strange to me. She said that she and I had a karmic connection. She saw the confused look on my face, and so she explained that we had been together in a previous journey. At that stage, I think the look on my face had changed from confused to concerned, if not horrified. How much can a confused, indoctrinated, reborn Christian digest in the space of a few hours? I think that at the time I was beginning to test the limits, but for some strange reason I was open to these weird and wacky ideas that were her beliefs. Normally I would have cut the discussion short, but I was intrigued. She spoke about her belief that our lives are preordained, which on the surface was not too different to what we as indoctrinated Christians believe, as we are forever saying, God has got a plan for each and every one of us. The difference with her view was that along our journey we will be faced with various tests or life lessons that we have to learn, and, depending on the choices we make, there will be different consequences. That sounded reasonable to me, as it was based on simple logic. You make the right choice or the wrong choice, but she didn't quite see it that way, as she believed that there was no right or wrong in the spiritual world. There were just choices, which you could call orange and yellow for that matter. This little nuance was difficult for me to accept. She spoke about astrology and the fact that she had had her astrological chart done several years ago, and everything that had been predicted in her life had come true. After some discussion about this, she went to get her chart and the notes and talked me through what had been said and predicted, and how all of it had actually materialized. I found this scary, concerning, and captivating all at once. She showed me her journals that she kept, hard-covered books that contained all her thoughts, including details of the tarot readings that she had done for herself, all in a strict chronological sequence. She pointed out the readings and notes that had predicted her joining a company like DocuNet long before it actually happened. I could relate to this time frame, and I was amazed. There had to be something more to this, as there were too many coincidences. I remember saying this to her. Her response was, "There's no such thing as coincidence. There is only your journey, and what is meant to happen will happen." I didn't have too much of a problem with this statement, as I had always believed in fate. At the time, I just didn't understand the how and why of it. We discussed, debated, argued, agreed, and disagreed on a whole variety of issues, and before we knew it, the sun had risen. It felt like the night was over in a flash. I was tired, excited, stimulated, confused, concerned, and interested. I had met someone who was so open and honest and so easy to talk to. I wanted to see her again, and so we made plans to meet again later in the day. We met later on, and our discussions ranged from topics such as work, music, spiritual aspects, and personal relationships. It was uncanny. Before she said something, I often already knew what she was going to say. At one stage, I think I tried to convince myself that I was actually telepathic, as I do not have another logical reason for this. I learned about her life, which had been extremely challenging, full of extremes. She had experienced wealth and poverty, personal success and failure. She'd been married for about 20 years and had been treated very poorly by her ex-husband in all ways. How she had tolerated and endured this did not make any sense to me. She put it down to her having to pay back karma from previous journeys. At the time, I thought it was her stupidity. If things are so bad, then pack your bags, take your kids and leave. That was my argument. She actually did, but it took her 19 years longer than I thought it should. But then again, I always have an answer for everything, or so I've been told. Lessons learned, 87. As a generalization, most of our spiritual beliefs are a consequence of many years of hearing the same things over and over again. We seldom choose to open our minds, hearts, and souls to new and different experiences. The Church has always been extremely good at telling us that anything not espoused by priests or the Bible is evil. Perhaps a lot of that may be true, but until such time as you've heard other points of view, how can you decide if it makes sense or not? 88. Everybody is entitled to their own truth. My truth is neither right nor wrong. It is simply my truth. The same applies to your truth. 89. Be prepared to listen to other points of view, and if they resonate with your gut, your soul, then internalize them. If not, then discard them, without casting judgment over the person sharing their truth with you. 90. There is no such thing as coincidence. Everything happens for a reason. To put us in a situation, environment, or relationship for us to experience and learn something about it. Over the next few days, our relationship evolved so rapidly, it was difficult to keep up. I was like a spiritual leech. I was constantly bombarding her with questions on everything that she shared with me. So much so that at one stage she thought that I was trying to belittle her beliefs, but this was never the case. I was so interested and intrigued, I was like a sponge trying to suck up more and more. I was trying to make sense of it, trying to see the logic as I felt that if our lives were so preordained by God and the universe, then it was a logical journey, and if it was logical, then I could understand it as I was the king of logic. In a way, it was also a good experience for her, because her beliefs were being truly tested, and it is only when you are forced to explain things to someone else that you really find out if you have truly understood them yourself. I contacted Zelda a few days after Debbie and I had broken up. I guess the reason was mainly to do with the fact that we'd previously had such fun together and enjoyed each other's company. I knew we could never be in a relationship again, but that shouldn't stop us from seeing each other. She had just broken up with a guy by the name of Richard. We decided to meet for lunch. It was great seeing her again. We had shared some of the most fantastic times together, but by the same token, we had shared some of the worst times together as well. Nevertheless, we always have and always will get on well, as we have so much in common, especially our passion for music. As it turned out, she was really sad that things hadn't worked out with Richard. I was surprised to hear her acknowledge that it was basically that she was basically the cause of the breakdown of the relationship. I have no doubt that Zelda and I will always have a special fondness for each other. We agreed that as we enjoyed each other's company, we would continue to see each other as friends, and should anything develop from there, then it was meant to be. I had already picked up a vibe that she was more serious about taking things further, but I wasn't. I wanted a bit of space. It would have been easy for us to fall back into the trap of the comfort zone of each other, but I had decided that I really didn't want a long-term relationship. Or so I thought. A month or two before, I had arranged with Dario, a very good friend of mine, to go down to his holiday house in Scottborough on the KwaZulu-Natal south coast for 10 days over the Christmas holidays. Dario was divorced, but his two young daughters were also going with him. When I made this arrangement, I was still with Debbie, and so Dario was expecting Debbie and her boys to accompany us. We had planned to meet him there on Saturday the 20th of December, 2003. Now, things had obviously changed quite dramatically during that week, so I called him to tell him that I was going to be coming on my own, as Debbie and I had broken up. While I was telling him the news, I suddenly thought that Maybe I should ask Gloria if she wanted to come with me. I asked Dario if that would be okay with him, and in his typical carefree Italian manner he said it was fine. So I asked Gloria, and she happily accepted. She then told me that her card readings, done many months before, had predicted that she would go on a romantic holiday to the coast at the end of the year. She'd been getting quite concerned, as it was already the middle of December and there was no holiday in sight, but then suddenly we met, and within a week we were off to the coast on holiday. On one occasion when I had seen Zelda, I had also mentioned that I was going on my own to stay with Dario, and that before his daughters arrived, we were going to do the boys' thing, you know, play golf, drink, party, have fun. A day or two before I was due to go down to the coast, I received a call from Zelda. She said, "I have this fantastic idea. I've decided to come down to Scottsboro with you, and we can all play golf and have fun." Oh, dear. I now had a delicate problem on my hands. I had told Zelda that I was going on my own, which was true at the time, but since then I had invited Gloria. So I did what I thought best at the time and said, no, it was going to be a boys' thing. On the Saturday morning, Gloria and I left for the coast. As it was a 6-hour drive, we had plenty of time to chat, and it was during this time that we both realized that this was going to be more than a casual fling. It was the beginning of a relationship. We had a fantastic time with Dario, and during this time, Gloria and I grew close. It was amazing how well we knew each other. For her, it made sense, as she believed we had a karmic connection. For me, it was just another one of these many strange things that I had started to experience that told me that there was a lot more to this life and universe that I did not understand but needed to. One of the many attributes that I had found unusual but amazing was her attitude towards my life story. For the first time in my life, I was able to tell a woman everything I had done, the good, the bad, the ugly. I didn't leave a single thing out, including my 3 affairs, yet she was never judgmental. I was receiving many, many SMS messages from Debbie during this time, and it never irritated or threatened her. In fact, I would show her the SMSs and ask her opinion on how I should deal with Debbie. In almost every instance, I did not respond. There was no way that I could tell Debbie that I was on holiday with another woman, a woman that I had only recently met, well, just a week ago. Debbie would never believe that I hadn't cheated on her, that I'd never had any connection or relationship with Gloria before we broke up. It was one of Debbie's worst fears, that I would leave her for someone else, as she'd decided that my track record made me a certifiable cheater. The fact that I was never unfaithful to Zelda or to Debbie did not mean that I was a rehabilitated man. Heck no. For her, it was only a matter of time before I resorted to such woeful ways. So, on the odd occasion that I did respond to her SMSs, it was always done on Gloria's advice and in the most decent, sensitive way possible. But Debbie wasn't about to give up on me just yet. Sound familiar? One rainy evening, when Dario, Gloria, and I were out having dinner at a little restaurant, a young woman who was selling single-stemmed roses walked in. I watched as she went through the restaurant trying in vain for a sale. When she got to our table, I asked her how her sales had been that evening, and she said they had been dismal. I felt quite sorry for her. So I asked her how many roses she had left, and she told me 31. I bought them all for Gloria. The surprised look on both women's faces was worth it. What I didn't know at the time was that this particular incident was a very specific sign for Gloria. Later on, I found out that in her earlier tarot reading regarding the end-of-the-year romantic holiday, she also learned that she would meet someone with whom she would have a mutually significant relationship, and that she would know this man by the following characteristics and all signs. 1. A little older than her. 2. He would have the following star signs in his chart: Gemini, Pisces, and Capricorn. 3. He would take her on a romantic holiday to the coast at the end of the year. And four, he would buy her an armful of flowers. The gesture of buying these 31 roses was the last sign that confirmed to her that I was the man, as all the other signs had been true. There was something else that she didn't tell me at the time, which was very important, but I'll get to that later. While at the coast, she had spoken to her two sons, who now knew that she was on holiday with this strange man. Her ex-husband obviously found out, and now, after a couple of years of enjoying drug-induced parties and a string of business failures, he decided to make a play for her again. Gloria has always loved him, despite the terrible life he had given her. As such, she was normally easy prey for him. Fortunately for her, she now had me in her life, and so she told him that she wasn't interested, which didn't go down well, as he was planning on driving their sons back from Plettenberg Bay and moving in with her. His job in Plettenberg Bay had apparently gone up in smoke. We returned home very much in love. I was so happy. I was finally in a relationship that was balanced, based on mutual respect, love, trust, and honesty. I could speak to her about absolutely anything and everything. My previous partners had always complained about my lack of communication and how I didn't share things. Now I was becoming a rambling idiot. I didn't need to be careful how I worded something. I could speak freely about my exes, which by now had amounted to the not-so-insignificant number of four. Gloria had this amazing ability to separate her human emotions from her spiritual emotions. I'd never met anyone as simple and yet as solid as her. I learned more about her life, the hardship she had suffered, and her extremely difficult marriage she had endured. She had struggled as much as anyone else I knew, but she never complained and always remained upbeat and positive, and her faith never faltered. Lessons learned? 91. If you and your partner are both mature and secure within yourselves, it is possible to have a totally open and honest relationship, and nothing from your past will make any difference. This can only be done if you communicate openly with each other and accept that your past is your past, where it belongs. It is your past that helps define who you are, but your present choices will determine who and where you will be in the future. Each day I learned more and more from Gloria. My intense inquisition continued without relent. I do believe that as a result of this, Gloria was forced to internalize much more of her head knowledge than she had ever had to before. I challenged her views, made her rethink many of them, but in the end it made me a lot more aware of the spiritual world, and it made her faith, knowledge, and beliefs stronger than ever. After New Year, her two sons returned from their holidays, and it was time for me to meet them. James is a good-looking, but at the time was a cocky 17-year-old. Ken was a gangly, awkward 11-year-old, who was very much his mommy's boy. At first, it was a bit difficult, because, as is normally the case, kids from a divorced home always hope that someday their parents will get back together. So if Mommy meets someone else, it puts a spanner in the works. Gloria told me that James was a bright but lazy student who battled at school purely because he was so lazy and disinterested. He loved computers and spent all his time on his computer. James had received a chess set from his father and rated himself as a really good chess player. So the best way for him to put me in my place was to whip me at chess. He challenged me and proceeded to tell me that chess is a wonderful way to show how intelligent you are. What was I to do? I hadn't played chess for many years. Did I tell him that I was captain of my primary school chess team before the Beatles were even popular to scare him off, or did I pray quietly that I didn't get whipped? I did neither. I just concentrated and made sure I beat him thoroughly and quickly. I had to teach this young pup some respect, and I did. After a few games, he finally gave up. I got along with them both, as I knew how to play the game. They soon relaxed and accepted me. By now, Gloria had also met Brett and Shayna, and they both liked her. One morning, during the second or third week of January, we had a big surprise. It was about 6 a.m. when my bedroom door burst open and Debbie stormed in. She found Gloria and I in bed asleep until the commotion woke us up, that is. She went berserk, screaming and shouting and throwing things around. I managed to eventually get her out of the house and out of the gate. I couldn't understand how she had managed to get in. So I called Netto, my long-suffering domestic helper. He told me that she had called him from the side gate and that I'd said it was okay for her to come in and fetch some plates she had left in the kitchen cupboards. He was reluctant at first, but she convinced him that she was only going to take the plates and leave. He believed her. The rest was like a slow-motion horror movie. It was about a month after we had broken up, and at no stage had I ever given Debbie any hope that there might be any reconciliation, but obviously she thought differently, and the results were extremely unpleasant for her. I can only imagine how terrible it must be to see someone you love in bed with another person. I really felt sorry for her, but I felt it was her choice to sneak in when she had no right to. I wasn't cheating on her, as we'd broken up a month before, and I was in a relationship with another woman. In Debbie's mind, I was cheating on her, and to this day, I'm not sure that she has ever forgiven me for it. The only way Annie could hurt me was through the children, and she used leverage whenever she could. Zelda had witnessed it many times, and so had Debbie. So if they wanted to hurt me, get Annie to use the kids against me. It wasn't that long before that Zelda had phoned Annie after I had broken up with her and was dating Debbie to tell her that Debbie was a former stripper. As a result of that call, Annie refused to send Stephen to stay with me for the holidays. Zelda got her way to score a point for her. In mid-January 2004, shortly after Debbie had popped into my bedroom unannounced, she managed to track down Zelda, and now they both had something in common. That bastard who had broken their hearts, so now they could form an alliance. Zelda didn't know it at this time that I had taken Gloria to Scottborough and was now in a relationship with her. I assume that Zelda was angry, as she had wanted to go to Scottborough with me herself, and I'd refused. Zelda still had Annie's telephone number, which she gave Debbie, and Debbie, in her tearful and possibly intoxicated state, called to tell her what an unfit father I was and that she shouldn't let Stephen and Jamie stay with me. Annie relishes this sort of drama, so much so that when she phoned to ask me if Debbie was taking drugs, as she was incoherent and difficult to understand. Late in January, Gloria came to see me. She was distraught, and she had just been threatened with eviction. After their divorce, her ex-husband Brad had been quite indifferent about paying her maintenance, as ruled by the courts. In fact, he didn't bother paying it at all, and Gloria was too soft and accommodating to report him to the courts. At the time, she was living under very difficult circumstances with her two sons in her parents' house. One day, she got a call from Brad, who asked her if she wanted to take over the house he was renting, as he had been offered a job in Plettenberg Bay, and there were still several months to run on the lease. She said she'd love to, but she couldn't afford the rent. So he said that he would pay the rent for her in lieu of maintenance. She thought this a great offer, so she accepted, and they moved in after Brad had moved out. What she didn't know was that he hadn't paid the rent while he was living there, nor did he bother to pay it after Gloria moved in. The landlord had been chasing him, but he'd always managed to avoid the calls. Eventually, the landlord confronted Gloria at the house. She had to come up with 7 months' rent or move out immediately. And there it was, another one of those precious moments in life when you have to make an immediate, important decision. I had this large house with two spare bedrooms upstairs. How could I not offer to take them in at this desperate time? What kind of person would that make me if I didn't? I remember thinking how ironic it was that no more than 6 weeks before, I'd been so keen to see Debbie and her two small boys move out. Yet here I was, offering to take Gloria and her two big boys in. What was this God's sense of humour at work? I did what I felt I had to do. I offered them a home. And so, before we knew it, we had created our own version of the Brady Bunch. Poor old Netto was astonished. At one stage, he'd only had to look after a large house and me. Then Brett and me, then Brett, Shayna and me, then Brett, Shayna, Gloria, James, Ken and me. This meant extra work for him, something that he wasn't partial to in the first place. So to appease him, I almost doubled his salary, and for a while he was smiling. Until he had work, that is. Sometimes I think he dislikes my generous personality more than I do. I briefly thought about the scenario where I'd have to explain this development to Debbie, but I figured that she would understand my reasons as much as she believed that I hadn't left her for another woman. Life is easy. It's just complicated by people. Everyone settled in quite nicely. We were like one big happy family. Brett and Shayna got on well with James, but found Ken a problem, about as much of a problem as his brother James found him. He was a different, a quiet, spiritual boy who was very close to his mother. He was not the sports jock. He was into his vegetable and herb gardening and playing computer games. So the poor boy bore the brunt of much teasing. Gloria was overly protective of Ken, so didn't appreciate the banter. I made a point that we all sat down as a family at 7 p.m. every evening, as it was a good way for everyone to bond and spend some quality time together. But these meals became the source of a single, niggling frustration: Ken's table manners. I've never seen such atrocious table manners in my life. He would attack, kill, and chomp his food open-mouthed in such a vigorous manner that you'd think he hadn't eaten in weeks. I decided to change the seating arrangement so he would sit next to me. Okay, so I was being a bit of a control freak, but for his own good. At first I spoke quietly to him without drawing attention to him, but that didn't work. Then I tried to signal him, either by eye or quietly saying his name. Gloria was not aware of his challenged table manners until I made her sit opposite him. She was unpleasantly surprised, and did her bit to try and assist me to ultimately help Ken. But it was an uphill struggle. At times he was almost okay, at others he was on top form, which got my back up. I suggested that he go and eat in the kitchen by himself, but Gloria felt that we should give him time to adapt. And how long does it take for an intelligent 11-year-old to learn to eat with his mouth closed? I began to believe that he was doing it on purpose, because of me forcing Gloria to sever the apron strings. She was also diverting a lot of her love and attention to me. So Ken was getting less, which no doubt riled him as much as his table manners riled me. The game was clearly on, but on a totally different level. This was my only area of discomfort. For the rest, everything was absolutely perfect, and I was the happiest I had ever been in a relationship. In February, I managed to book tickets to see my favourite band, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, who were to perform live in Milan. The concert was only in June, but the tickets went on sale on the internet months before. I always said I would travel anywhere in the world to see them perform. It had been a dream of mine for about a decade. I'd often tried to book, but the tickets were always sold out within minutes of opening. After much perseverance on a totally Italian website, I managed to book two tickets. I had no idea where in the San Siro stadium I had booked, but the important thing was I was going to see them. Gloria was ecstatic because, beside the fact that she loved the Peppers, she had never travelled overseas. So I booked a two-week trip that would take us to Venice, Milan, Genoa, Florence, and Rome. My interest in numerology and astrology was growing. I'd wanted to have my astrological chart done once, since I'd learned what had been said and predicted on Gloria's chart, which had been done many years before. I asked her to give me the number of the person who had done her chart. She said that he'd long since retired, but that she could find someone for me. She managed to get the number of a chap called Lawrence, who'd studied under the professor who'd done her chart. I remember phoning him from my car phone one evening during the second week of January 2004. I remember exactly where I was on the road when I spoke to him. He asked me for the spelling of my full name, my date of birth, time of birth, where I was born, and my parents' dates of birth. That was all. I asked him when I could expect the chart, assuming it would be coming the following week, but to my dismay, he said the end of February. You've got to be kidding me. Clearly, he didn't understand that my chart was urgent. He politely told me I was in the queue and it would be done by the end of February. I've always hated queues, but here I was in a six-week queue. On the morning of Thursday, the 26th of February, 2004, I phoned him once again from my car as I was arriving at work. I thought he might need a reminder that the end of February was nigh. He was pleased I'd called, as he was busy with my chart at that moment and was finding it very interesting. Try living my life, I thought, somewhat cynically at the time. Because I was skeptical about this stuff, I decided that I would only give monosyllabic answers to any question he had. He made some comments which made the hair on my arms and neck stand up. He said, "You are either in the electronics industry or the IT industry, probably IT." My response was carefully measured and thought out. "Uh-huh. You are unlucky in love. You've been married once, probably twice." My response was a carefully measured and thought out. "Uh-huh. One of your wives was extremely critical of you." I didn't respond, but was thinking, does he know Annie? "You have an issue with your father, a long-standing issue." My response was, no, he had passed away, but I don't believe that I ever had an issue with him. "The issue is with the authoritarian figure in your family. Which parent was that?" My response was, my mother. As suddenly I realized what he was referring to, but I didn't say anything. It had to do with how my mother continually ran my father down while he was alive, as well as after his passing. I felt that at times she was completely emasculating him, and I had a major problem with that. He said that he should be finished with my chart in the next couple of days and would call me when it was ready. He phoned me early the next week and said I could meet with him on the Friday, which was the 5th of March. Damn! I was now excited and intrigued about what else this chart would reveal. We were due to spend the weekend with Mike at his house in White River, but this was more important, so I cancelled with Mike. On Friday, I met Lawrence for the first time. He was a calm, relaxed individual who had achieved career success and had retired to pursue his two passions, astrology, which he'd been studying for some 25 years, and coaching of some of the most talented school athletes in the province. We sat down and he handed me two C90 cassette tapes and a chart full of hieroglyphics. He said he was going to explain things to me in more detail as I had an aptitude for astrology and someday I might choose to exploit it further. Then he started. I made some notes, but within a couple of minutes I was battling to comprehend all this stuff about retrograde planets and T-squares and the like. He explained the 12 houses that make up the astrological chart and the differences between the sun signs. I tried as best I could to keep up with and understand this new, very complicated world that I was being exposed to, but I failed. I started to question a number of things to make sense of it all. He spoke about the law of karma, which he called the lessons of life. He said it is cause and effect. We are the sum total of our past, so if we have sown positive things in the past, we will reap benefits now, and conversely, if we have sown negative things in the past, we will suffer the consequences now. He spoke of the concept of cause and effect, and in other words, how we determine our fate based on the situations we encounter and the choices we make. One of the more difficult views to accept was the fact that, according to him, there's no such thing as good or evil in the universe. It is like saying that there's no right or wrong, which for me, Being a logical person was hard to accept. I eventually came to terms with this concept, which I will describe in more detail later. In terms of our karma, he said that we lived as many lives or journeys as was necessary to work out or deal with the karma that we had created for ourselves. He told me about the Akashic records that we all have. In simple terms, that is our personal log or score sheet, which is used to record all our negative thoughts, words, or actions. In other words, every bad thing we think, say, or do gets chalked up and is the basis for recording the karmic debts that we have to settle at a later stage. Gives a whole new meaning to the age-old phrase of God is watching you, doesn't it? Then he started talking about me, my life, my personality, my strengths, and my weaknesses. I was so amazed about the accuracy that I forgot to make notes. He explained that I was an old soul, which threw me, as this is exactly what Gloria had called me when we first met. He mentioned that my mother was a very strong influence on me and will continue to do so even past her grave. Scary thought, that. That discipline is a vital thing in my life, which is so true. That when I need to escape, I either take refuge in materiality, that is, work, which is what I did when I was married to Jenny, or alternatively, I emotionally withdraw into a rut, which is what I did when I was married to Annie. That I was unlucky in love. That a major part of my journey was to deal with my past life repression of aspects such as ideas and thoughts, which could have been on a mental or a spiritual level. That I'm starting to look at things in a way that I never would have, and I was being drawn to the metaphysical. That there was going to be a major change in my life and my work sometime in the next 8 years, and I would be involved in some form of humanitarian work. I was anxious to get the answer to these two specific questions. Firstly, whether Gloria was my lifetime partner, and secondly, whether Gloria and I had a karmic connection. Although I hadn't yet asked the questions, he answered the second one by asking me whom I had met through work in early January, as I had a karmic connection with that person. This threw me a bit as I tried to remember business contacts who fitted the bill. Eventually, I asked how relevant was the timeline, if a few weeks either way made a difference. He explained that in the context of universal time, a couple of weeks either way was not significant, and there I had my answer. I had only truly met Gloria on the 12th of December, a few weeks prior to this time estimate. I was ecstatic. She was right. I then explained who Gloria was and that she'd also said that we had a karmic connection. I then asked him that given the fact that I had met Gloria and we had this karmic connection, if she was my soulmate, my lifetime partner. His reply once again, "Remember I said you were unlucky in love?" But I wasn't happy with this, so I asked him if I had met my true love in Gloria. He replied, "Look, it's not my role to tell you that. You must live your life and enjoy each and every day and each relationship that you are in." I left it at that. I was pleased I had established that Gloria and I had a karmic connection. I was in the best relationship of my life, and I was happy. He told me that the tapes contained a lot more detail and explanation of the issues we had discussed, as well as the 2-year forward projection of what might happen in my life, depending on the situations and choices I made along the way. He said he generally disliked doing these projections because it made people try and live their lives according to what might happen, rather than actually living their lives. For that very reason, he didn't bother with such projections for himself. Life was there to be lived on a day-to-day basis. I left him with my mind in a spin. So many thoughts, realities, and concerns were swirling about my head. I felt enlightened, insignificant in this amazing universe. I was amazed that the little detail I had given him telephonically back in January could reveal so much. God and his universe, or God the universe, whichever way you want to look at it, was far too structured, planned, and preordained to be discounted or ignored. I was looking forward to getting home and listening to the tapes. When I got home, I told Gloria what had been said. She had lots of questions, mostly from the advanced student's domain, which I couldn't answer. So I gave her my hieroglyphically drawn chart and told her to listen to the tapes with me in the study. "No, I can't do that. They're personal," she said. "Of course you can. I had nothing to hide or be concerned about. And besides, I'd appreciate your help in understanding what is being said, as most of it goes over my head." And so we started listening to Lawrence speaking about my chart. There are too many points or aspects to mention, but some of the more important ones of life or spiritual comments were, we need to come to terms with who we are. That as situations in our lives change, we need to alter our opinions and our beliefs to deal with them. How we perceive and accept the reasons for undergoing these situations and experiences is critical. If we are able to learn from them, then we grow as souls. At one stage, I noticed that Gloria had started to cry. I asked her what it was that it had upset her, but she just shook her head. Clearly, I had missed it on the tape, so I rewound it and listened again. The 12th House South Node has completed a karmic path, the details of which are to remain forever sealed in past times, even though the subtle Akashic essence still remains. Lifetimes of escaping from inner torment have been completed. You must come to realize that most of your inner negativity is not related to the current life, but only exists through your continuing to think along a track which has already ended. I didn't understand what all this meant, but Gloria interpreted it as this lifetime, maybe my last journey. Whether it is or isn't is not important to me. What upset her was the fact that because we had a karmic connection in a previous life and a karmic relationship in this life, she was hoping we would also have it in a future life. If this was potentially my last journey, then this would not be the case. When we got to the section of the tape that dealt with the 2-year forward projection, I got even more confused because of the way in which he read the chart. He would be speaking of February 2006, then jumped to November 2004, and then to October 2005. So I soon lost interest in it and decided to listen again at another time and to write the detail down so I could sort it out in a chronological sequence in order for it to make sense. A few days later, I attempted to do this, but I only got halfway through it and I became bored again, so I stopped. I never did get to finish writing the details of the 2-year forward projection. I'm not sure why. What was interesting was how similar Gloria's numerology was to Lawrence's astrology. Clearly, there is more to this world than what we, indoctrinated Christians, are allowed or encouraged to believe. Lessons learned, 92. Practices such as astrology and numerology are very complex and amazingly accurate. To me, this proved there is something else out there, so ingenious and clever and logical, to which I could relate. 93. As with everything in life, whatever you see, hear, or read must resonate with your gut, your soul, for you to accept it. If it doesn't, reject it. But you must have an open mind or soul in the first place. Because someone predicts or says something about you does not mean it has to be true. It is merely that person's interpretation of the information at hand. 94. Just as there are some dubious pastors out there are a lot of charlatans too, espousing different spiritual practices such as astrology and numerology. So make sure that you do your homework to identify the best possible person to see if you choose this route. This new spiritual world and outlook began to make sense to me. I could join almost all the dots based on logic and reasoning. All the arguments that I had used against these concepts and views had logical answers, so I could easily accept them. There were, however, two very serious and fundamental questions to which I had no answer. They were the final pieces of the jigsaw puzzle. One, if I was an old soul, why was it that I didn't have the spiritual knowledge of someone like Gloria, who considered herself to be a mature soul? And two, if this was potentially my last journey, what about the negative karma that I had created in this journey, the hurt I had caused Jenny, Annie, Zelda, and Debbie? After all, I had walked out on all of them, breaking their hearts in the process. Did this mean that the second half of my journey was going to be a period of payback to settle the scores in the Akashic records? I kept trying to figure it out. I discussed this with Gloria many times, and neither of us had the answers. My big mistake was not taking the trouble to actually ask God for the answers. Sometime during March, I started thinking about Debbie a lot. It was strange, but she was constantly on my mind. Why, I did not know. Towards the end of March, I received an unexpected email from her. It was a request to help a friend of her mother's with a computer-related problem. The email was short and professional. I decided to respond and used the opportunity to try and get some form of closure with her. The last time I had seen or heard from her was when she'd stormed into my bedroom more than 2 months before. Despite the fact that I had every right to be with someone else as we'd broken up, and despite the fact that she had used devious means to get access to my house, nobody deserves to see someone that they love in bed with another person. Yes, I was angry that she did what she did, but I still hoped we could mend bridges and be friends. She was a good person, and I would always be prepared to help her if she needed it. What was also true is that I did still love her. I also loved Gloria. Were they different types of love? Was it possible, or was I just confused? So good was my relationship with Gloria that I was able to talk to her about it. She was amazing. No doubt she might have felt a little threatened, but she was able to address the issue in a mature way. We discussed this issue one evening, and Gloria suggested that I should go and see Debbie right then, that evening. I said no, but decided that perhaps I should meet Debbie again to see how I felt. What was nagging me in my gut, not my head, was that there was unfinished business with Debbie that I had not attended to, but I didn't know what. I arranged to meet her a few days later. It was nice to be able to speak freely and apologize for the hurt we'd caused each other. She asked me what it was all about, so I told her what my gut feeling was, and that I was in a very confused space. I explained that I had prayed to God for guidance and to give me clarity on what I was supposed to do in the next 2 weeks. She said she still loved me, but I was being extremely selfish by leading her on. That maybe in 2 weeks' time, I'd say to her that we should get back together, or maybe not. How could I get her hopes up and then hurt her again? I apologized for putting her through this, but I needed to know where she stood. She was right. It was selfish, but I had such a strong belief that God would give me the answer in the time frame that I had asked for, but I had to wait on Him. In the meantime, life went on as I struggled with my dilemma. A couple of days later, on a Friday afternoon, I received a call from Debbie saying that she was no longer prepared to wait for my answer. I had to tell her now. I explained that I couldn't, as I had not received my answer from God, as it was only a week since I'd asked Him. She said she'd take that as a no and would move on with her life, that I was not to contact her again. With that, she ended the call. Was this a sign from God? I guess I had to assume it was. Things were fine back home until the following Friday evening, the 16th of April 2004. At the dinner table, Ken was fine-tuning his table manners, and I told him quietly to stop eating like a pig. James then teased him about his gardening, and Brett also joined in, but it wasn't anything more than a joke. Next thing, Ken burst into tears, and Gloria lost it. She did something she had never done before. She started shouting at me for constantly picking on Ken about his table manners and the fact that the rest of the kids were always teasing him. I didn't react too well to this sudden outburst and responded, "I'm now sick and tired after almost 4 months of having to tell Ken on a daily basis how to eat properly. How long must I be patient for?" And besides, it was just a joke. He shouldn't be such a baby. He's always teasing the other kids at the table, so if he wants to dish it out, he must also take it. Even James sprang to my defense, telling his mother that it was not fair that she should be shouting at me about this, as Ken should have learned a long time ago. Gloria stormed off. I was seething. I got up and left the table and went outside to cool off. With hindsight, it is easy to see that this was the result of tension building up between Gloria and me because of the uncertainty of our relationship. She shut herself off from me, and I reciprocated. So much so that I even ended up sleeping downstairs on the couch that night. There was a wall between us. It was our first argument. The next morning I decided to go to the shops, anything to get out of the house. As I got out of the driveway, I decided to call Lawrence from my car phone. Up until now, I had never asked anyone for advice. I had never felt the need to, but today I did. The last time I had spoken to him was when I went to see him 6 weeks before. He remembered me, but got my chart out in front of him to refresh his memory. He asked how work was and how my love life was. I explained that I was having a little difficulty with Ken, so he asked his date of birth. He said that this youngster was in my life to test me. He told me that he'd been engaged to a woman in a similar scenario, but sadly, he'd had to end the relationship as a result. I remember I was driving through the parking lot of the Lone Hill Shopping Center when he said, "Your ideal partner is a Leo. She's much younger than you. She's attractive, with a great figure, and behaves like a princess." I almost crashed my car. Lawrence didn't know anything about Debbie. In fact, he didn't even know she existed. Nor did he know the dilemma I'd been through over the past 2 weeks. She was a Leo. She was 27. She was attractive. And she had a great figure. I didn't mention this to Lawrence, though. We continued to chat, and by now I'd arrived home and had parked my car in the garage. I noticed that Gloria's car wasn't there, so she had obviously gone out. I told him that I had a very important decision to make, and I had prayed to God for guidance. He then told me one of the most important things I have ever heard in my life. He said that whatever decision I made, I must trust my gut, not my head. He said, "Your gut is your soul, your spirit, which talks to you, and no matter what, you must always listen to it." I finally ended the conversation and I prayed. I said that in my gut I felt I should go back to Debbie, that there was unfinished business. My head was telling me I was crazy. How could I hurt Gloria and the kids? How they would have to move out, that they did not have the money to do so. Besides the argument the previous night, this was the best relationship I had ever had. Was I crazy? Didn't I remember all the drama I had with Debbie? It had been an extremely difficult relationship, and did I want to be saddled with two difficult small boys to bring up? Today was the last day of the 2 weeks, the time I had asked God to give me clarity. But had I not received the answer when Debbie told me to contact her? I said to God that I would send Debbie an SMS, and if she responded positively, then I would take it as the sign that my gut feel was correct. If not, then I was meant to stay with Gloria. I took a deep breath and started to type the SMS to Debbie. I had typed about 3 or 4 characters when my phone suddenly beeped with an incoming SMS. It was from Debbie, and she asked me if I'd made a decision. In that instant, the decision was made. I had goose flesh all over. I once again realized how powerful God was. So I phoned her and arranged to meet her at 1300 hours at a coffee shop in Lone Hill. I phoned Gloria, who told me she was at her parents' house and that she was planning to stay there that night. I didn't tell her that I had made a decision, as I had to do that face to face. In my heart, I knew that she knew it was over. She was always so perceptive. Lessons learned? 95. When confronted with difficult situations that you are struggling to understand, do not be afraid to ask God for guidance. Do not ask God to solve the problem for you, as he will not, but he will give you a better understanding in order for you to make your decision. 96. The most important lesson in life is to learn implicitly to trust your gut feel, your instinct, when faced with important decisions or situations. All too often we allow our heads to rationalize, which overrules our gut feel. Our gut feel is our inner soul communicating with us. 97. If you've made a decision based on your gut feel and upon reflection or with the benefit of hindsight, you feel it did not work out in the best possible way, just remember that it was the right decision. In other words, even the wrong decision was the right decision, providing it was based on gut feel. The reason why it was the right decision was because it put you in a situation to experience and learn from something that was meant to be in order for you to grow. I met with Debbie and discussed the implications of the decision that I had made. It wasn't going to be easy, as I would have to find a place for Gloria to live, and I would have to support her financially. This was the least I could do, as these were the consequences of my decision, and I had to face them. I was also not prepared to do anything to make things unpleasant, as Gloria was a wonderful person who had been the catalyst to my spiritual awakening. Besides, I was now aware of the concept of karma, and I didn't want to create any more for myself. As far as I was concerned, I had created too much already. I spent the night at home alone. I couldn't sleep at all. I was confused. So much had happened in such a short space of time. I had finally experienced a strong, balanced relationship, and I knew that the decision I made, the decision that I believe I had to make, was going to complicate my life further. I knew it wasn't going to be an easy ride, but I knew I had to give it my best shot. I was sad, yet excited. For once I felt I had a purpose. I accepted I was sacrificing something that I'd always wanted, something I felt I'd always deserved, a good relationship with my partner. Sometimes the universe is confusing, but I believe that I was doing what I had to do. On the Sunday, I decided to take Debbie and her boys out for lunch in the countryside. The boys were pleased that I was back. They had missed me. We drove out to Hartebeespoort Dam and had lunch at a nice restaurant. I was back to playing daddy to two young boys, making sure they behaved. Later, I dropped them off and went home. Gloria was there, and the reception was okay. She's such a strong woman, but mostly doesn't realize it. I spoke to her and told her what she knew already. I told her that I would help her financially, and we would find suitable accommodation for her and the boys. It wasn't easy. It hurt me that I had to do this. My head kept throwing thoughts at me, questioning what I was doing and why. My head was being logical, rational, but my gut was pushing me in another direction. It was impossible for us to share the same bed, yet I wasn't prepared to sleep on the couch again. I felt we both needed space, so I decided to go and stay at a city lodge only a few kilometres away. I left and phoned Debbie and told her of my plans. She decided she wanted to join me, and she did. We spent the night together, but I couldn't sleep. The constant conflict of head versus gut was raging in my mind. In my body, I wished I was a Mormon. Then I could have had both of them, shared with them, nurtured them. I knew I'd already made a significant impact on Gloria's life, just as she had on mine. She told me that I taught her about generosity, a total unselfish love where she had experienced a partner who gave but did not seek anything in return. Is that unconditional love? I don't know. But the truth is, I received from her as well. I received from her a gift which was beyond measure. I received my spiritual awakening. I left the city lodge at about 5:45 and called Gloria to let her know that I would be back in a few minutes. She sounded upbeat. She said everything was okay and the way it was meant to be. She would explain why when I got there. When I got home, she was in our bathroom getting ready to take the kids to school. She hugged me and said that our time together was over, and that was how it was meant to be. She'd been praying and meditating all night, and God had given her the answers she had been seeking. What she then told me was a big surprise. She said that before she even met me, she knew that our relationship was only meant to last about 6 months. I couldn't believe it. She'd known this all along and never shared it with me. With the benefit of hindsight, I guess she was right not to have told me. What concerned her was that we had been together for just over 4 months, so she was unsure if this was the time to part. During her meditation and prayer, she'd asked God why this was happening to her. The same two questions that had been puzzling me. The same two questions I hadn't bothered to ask God myself. One, if I was meant to be an old soul, why was it that I did not have the spiritual knowledge of someone like Gloria, who is a mature soul? And two, if this was potentially my last journey, what about the negative karma that I had created in the journey? The hurt I had caused Jenny, Annie, Zelda, Debbie, and now Gloria. After all, I had walked out on all of them, breaking their hearts in the process. Did this mean that the second half of the journey was going to be a period of payback to settle the scores in their Akashic records? I was sitting down while she was talking, and probably just as well. She told me that God had told her that she and the other four women I had been involved with were all meant to learn the lesson of rejection, for which I was the catalyst. She went on to explain that all five of them had suffered from rejection in the past, and in most cases there were two children involved. At first it didn't make sense, but slowly I managed to put the pieces together. Jenny was one of four children, an older sister, an older brother, and a younger brother. The older sister, Peter, was an attractive achiever whom her mother adored. Peter was an air hostess who travelled the world. Jenny was an underachiever at school. In fact, she left after Standard 7, Grade 9. All the praise and attention from her mother was showered on Peter. Jenny got none. I began to have memory flashes of instances where I had witnessed this. Peter had confidence. Jenny had absolutely none. Jenny had experienced rejection from her mother. Annie was a totally unplanned child. She was the fourth daughter, but born almost 20 years after the first daughter, and at least 10 years after the third. At the time of her birth, her parents had been pursuing a career in renovating older hotels in the country areas of Natal. Having a small daughter was not part of the plan, and from what I can recall, she was brought up more by their domestic worker than anyone else. As soon as possible, she was sent off as a full-time boarder to an elite girls' school in Pietermaritzburg. She only came home during school holidays. Annie's father died when she was about 14. Annie had experienced rejection from both parents, and perhaps to a greater extent from her father. Zelda came from a close Afrikaans family. She was the eldest child and had a younger sister and two younger brothers. Her father ruled with an iron fist. Nobody spoke unless spoken to, and if the father said something, then everyone, including her mother, jumped. All the kids were driven to perform better than their best. As a result, they were all well-educated and achieved significant success in their careers. At school, whether in academics or sport, there was no such thing as coming second. That wasn't good enough. Yet, despite their achievements, their father rarely complimented them or praised them. They all loved their father dearly, and he loved them, but could never show it. I remember many instances when Zelda would try for some love and attention from him, and he would just push her away, as if being smothered. Zelda had to be constantly told how good she was, how great her hair looked, how pretty she was, how clever she was. In fact, she often used to say to me, "You have to boost me." She'd experienced continuous rejection from her father, who, although intensely proud of her, was unable to express it. In her mind, she just wasn't good enough. Debbie was also an unplanned pregnancy when her very young mother was living in Zimbabwe. In fact, her mother, Pat, and her father never married because her father was murdered a short while after she was born, as a terrible byproduct of the Rhodesian-Zimbabwean War. Pat eventually did marry, but Debbie's stepfather didn't care too much for her. He constantly punished her, which included severe hidings. When her mother had a son by him, Debbie was further rejected as her little brother got all the attention. Debbie became very rebellious and from an early age was sneaking out and partying late, in defiance of her mother and stepfather. She felt rejected because she had never had a father and her stepfather never liked her or accepted her. She felt that her mother never really stuck up for her, and she was all but ignored once her half-brother was born. Gloria was the eldest of two daughters, but there is a big age gap of some 10 years between them. Although the family is very close, her father was not affectionate towards them, and when her sister was born, she received all his attention. Her younger sister is extremely intelligent and achieved distinction in everything she did. Nothing Gloria ever did was good enough. In matric, grade 12, Gloria fell pregnant the first time she had sex. Although she did marry Brad, a few years her senior, it was a nightmare of a marriage. He treated her poorly, was continually unfaithful to her, was extremely critical of her, and managed to totally destroy what little self-esteem she had. After 20 years of pain and suffering, she eventually managed to pluck up the courage to leave him. The rejection she felt and experienced from her father had continued through Brad. The key to understanding all this is that whatever we have to suffer as individuals or lessons we need to learn, we have to be careful that we don't perpetuate the same suffering through our children. We have to break the chain so once we have learned our lessons, whatever they might be, we must ensure that our children do not have to experience the same. Now, although it began to make sense and I could see the common thread between these women, it hadn't answered my question of the negative karma that I had created through hurt and pain that I had caused each of them. But Gloria hadn't finished telling me the message she'd received. She said that it was now over and there would be no further women in my life needing to deal with rejection. She went on to say that this was my last journey. I had apparently volunteered to undertake the journey in order to be the catalyst for their lessons of rejection, and as such, there was no karma attached. This clearly answered my second question. I asked her again about the fact that, as a supposedly old soul, why my spiritual knowledge and awareness was so limited. She said that it was meant to be that way. If I'd had the spiritual knowledge and awareness of karma and life lessons, I would never have been able to complete the part of my journey. I wouldn't have been able to hurt, cheat on, and generally be the person I had been. That is so true, as my attitudes had changed so dramatically that I would never willingly or knowingly do such things again. I'm acutely aware of any possible negative karma that I might create, so I try to avoid it at all costs. That doesn't mean I'm always successful in achieving this perfection, as I still make stupid mistakes and say the occasional hurtful thing. But fortunately, these incidents are now becoming rarer. Finally, I had the answers to the two questions that were preventing me from understanding my journey. My understanding was now complete. It all made perfect sense, my life, my relationships, my journey. I know the answers came from God, as Gloria knew little about my previous relationships, other than with Debbie, which she had been exposed to in a small way. She didn't know anything about the lives and backgrounds of Jenny, Annie, and Zelda. After a late awakening, I finally realized my journey of spiritual discovery. I was relieved, I was excited, I was happy, I was sad. Gloria said she was now able to let go as our time together was over. Because she was now also able to understand why we'd been together, she could accept that we would part. I was in her life to allow her to learn the lesson of rejection, and she was in my life to awaken my spiritual being and awareness. She said we would continue to be connected in this lifetime as we were spiritual partners. Over time, this has been proved to be correct. I suddenly remembered that I had written something down from the extracts of the astrological tape that Lawrence had made for me. It had something to do with a particular time when I might meet my spiritual teacher. I thought perhaps this was the role that Gloria was fulfilling. I rushed down to my study and took out my notes. What I read sent absolute shivers down my spine, covering my whole body in goose flesh. In the 2-year projection, Lawrence always talked about the month and the year, for example, June 2005 or March 2006. However, the only month that had a specific date in it was April 2004, when he referred to the 23rd of April 2004. What he said was, "At this time you will reach a new understanding of your own being and the world around you. In recent years, you have probably been through periods of great doubt, uncertainty, and confusion. Although those periods were painful, they have contributed to your new view of the world. Now is the time to deepen and take advantage of your new understanding. Your ideals are not in conflict with the realities of your life at this time. They are in creative balance with the ideal giving form and the real giving life. Your approach is one of calm, sober reflection. This is not a transit of lightness and gaiety. Instead, it produces an almost monastic consciousness that contemplates the world with detachment. You have learned much in the last few years, and now you will be able to put into practice what you have learned. All Saturn's transits last for plus minus 8 to 10 days. That morning, the morning of my spiritual awakening, was the 19th of April, 2004. In the context of the transit period of plus minus 8 to 10 days, which, as I understood it, could be a few days either side of the 23rd of April, 2004 that he'd mentioned, this was mind-blowing for me, almost surreal. Lawrence had recorded this more than 2 months before. I had written it down almost 6 weeks ago, and it meant nothing to me at the time, to be honest. I barely remembered it. I'd been reading the notes, looking for something else, when it hit me between the eyes. I sat there with tears running down my cheeks, trying to comprehend my amazement of God and his universe.